If you stand at a corner near the Inner Harbor and press the crosswalk button, you experience in miniature the season of Advent. Or what it has become in our time. Piped in from little speakers that hang by the ice rink is Christmas music. Frosty the Snowman, Santa Baby, chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Alvin and the Chipmunks, okay Simon, okay Theodore, Alvin! While the electronic voice in the traffic signal says, wait. It's nutty and noisy and grounding somehow to seek the coming of Jesus at Charles and Pratt. That intersection of voices and desires is not so different from what we experience here. For those of us who are counting, today is the second Sunday of Advent. With two down and two to go, we're halfway through this season of waiting, halfway to Christmas and to the coming of Christ as one of us, as part of us. Unlike the culture that surrounds us, however, the church seems to be in no great hurry to get there. Instead, with the wisdom of centuries, our tradition tells us that the journey itself is what we need. More than the tree and presents, for sure, but maybe even more than finally reaching that little shed in Bethlehem. Wait. Watch. Wonder. The movement more than the arrival is the thing. It asks us to pause and take stock, to lie on some hillside a little distant from our destination and read the stars. It tells us to empty our hearts so that there is room enough in them for the birth of something new and altogether unforeseen. What are you waiting for? Look at the windows that burn like fire when the sun shines through them. Look at the cross and the candles and the flowers. Consider the silent space these walls enclose and also the sounds that break open that silence. The choirs and musicians, the voices of children, loved ones crying. The singing and praying and preaching and laughing that draws us in. What does it all add up to? What are we doing when we gather in this building? We're trying to hear God, I believe, and speak to her, and find our own voice. We're searching for something of God's peace, trying somehow to take God into our lives the way we take bread into our bodies. We're stretching to love more deeply and do justice better so that no one has too much and everyone has enough. I think we're organizing our lives here, reorienting ourselves along a path that makes us well and equips us to restore the world. And we are waiting. We who live much of the time in our own darkness, or in the darkness that the world is lost in, or in the darkness that someone else inflicts on us, we are waiting, not just in Advent, but at all times for the advent of light. It's no accident that this season of waiting comes when the days are at their shortest and we wait for the daylight to come. Frederick Buechner writes, "When Jesus said that we must become more like children, I wonder if what he meant is that we must learn to wait like children. I think of the way my brother and I waited for the coming of Christmas when we were children. I remember the Advent cards our grandparents used to send us every year, with a sprinkling of tinsel dust on the roofs of the little village for snow, and the windows that you opened, one for each day, to show a candy cane or a teddy bear or a rocking horse. I remember how we hung the card on the lampshade so the light would shine through. And I can still feel the excitement in the pit of my stomach as it drew closer and closer to the 24th day, when you opened not just another window, but the doors of a stable. And inside the stable, there was a baby asleep in the straw. Buechner continues, "Then on Christmas morning, we would drive from wherever we were living at the time into New York City. And along with my father's two brothers and their families, we would start waiting all over again in the dim hallway of our grandparents' apartment. Until finally, our grandfather appeared ringing a handbell like a Salvation Army Santa Claus. And he opened the curtain glass doors onto indescribable magic, presents, a twinkling tree, and piles of cookies. That was the light of it. But tucked away in certain corners and out beyond the curtain doors was also darkness, of course, because that's the way life is." Buechner writes, "A month before my 10th Christmas, my father committed suicide. And only a few days later, my grandfather, the one who rang the bell and opened the doors, died as much from a broken heart as anything else." Now, some would say that this advent of angry partisan politics, of Delta and Omicron variants, of the perversion of violence and racism and class, that there is never Christmas enough to stop our difficult experiences from happening, not for Buechner's family nor for us. And I guess on some level, they could be right. But on a deeper and more ancient and more true level, I believe that there's always Christ enough to make anything bearable, to make everything possible, to make each one of us more than conquerors, more than our hurts and our small-mindedness and our worst acts. And that's what John is talking about when he quotes Isaiah in the gospel today. You see, love lifts all those who've been cast down and shakes the mighty from their seat. Love does. Love heals all and knits each one back together at the broken places. That's what love does. Love set the world in motion way back when. And love is what can restore us now. Where does love come from, y'all? Now, I'd say it comes from God, but I'd say I'm looking at God's flesh right now. So when love is set in motion, it's because you've got your hands and your hearts and your minds engaged. The prophet says, "Every valley shall be filled, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked ways shall be made straight, and the rough ways smooth, and all flesh shall see the salvation of God." What are we waiting for? That's not a prophecy. That's a description of what we can do right now. I'm going to tell you a secret that a friend of mine told me. A small Jewish community had, over recent time, become badly divided. Deep disagreements and resentments heaped upon previous disputes had left large portions of the community angry and hurt. The town's problems had grown so unbearable that the mayor, deeply frustrated by the inability of people to get along, sought the advice of a wise and revered rabbi who lived in a faraway village. The mayor told the story of his town to the rabbi. The rabbi advised the mayor to go back and announce to the town some dramatic and staggering news: that the Messiah had finally come. Indeed, that the Messiah had come to their very village and now lived among them. Now, while the mayor was confused by the rabbi's advice, he did what he was told. The mayor's announcement stunned the townspeople. "The Messiah has come among us? How can this be?" they asked in astonishment and disbelief. Yet, as many concluded, if this wise rabbi has told us the Messiah has arrived, so it must be. But just who is the Messiah now living among us? Not surprisingly, the townspeople began to wonder about each other. Could this person be the Messiah? How about this one? Couldn't be that one. Many doubted that certain people in the community could be the Messiah, those with whom they disagreed or had engaged in disputes. But how could they be certain? Because no one knew the answer, they began to treat each other differently, with more respect, even reverence, just in case. Those that they'd been quick to discount in the past were now seen with different eyes. After all, one of them might be the Messiah. As the months passed, a remarkable thing happened. So much of the bitterness and the anger began to die away. Divisions were mended, disagreements became less common, and a sense of peace settled into the town. Not that it was easy, but what was the alternative given that the Messiah was among them? Years later, the wise rabbi visited the town, called upon the mayor, and asked him how things were going. The mayor described the changes that had taken place. But you know, even more amazing, the mayor added, people have begun to treat the poor and homeless in the community in a different way. We began to wonder if even one of them might be the Messiah. The mayor then added, you know, we've never learned which one of us is the Messiah. Ah, my friend, the rabbi replied, don't you see? The Messiah is here, not in one of you, but in all of you. That's the Messiah's secret until the world ends. You feel me? Does this story sound familiar? We're gonna sing about it in 2 weeks. We call it Christmas. What are we waiting for? Something else. This is good enough. This will change our lives. Just think, if for 15 minutes, 15 days, 15 weeks, 15 years, we treated each other in this city and county as if the Messiah had come and was living in the one we were talking to. Or if we had this sense that, well, it could be her, so I better treat her with kindness. What are we waiting for? How will you live now and love now, knowing that the Christ is alive in each one of us? The world now is too dangerous for anything but truth, and too small for anything but love, and we have no time to wait. Amen.